Thank you, Patty. I don't have any scary monsters that are dressed up exactly the way Christine's were, but there are some scary monsters in here, too. So I have no relationships to disclose, no legal disclaimers or anything. Today, I will address the obesity and diet-related disease epidemic through the advancement of local fast food policies with a particular eye toward children, as many recent studies, I'm sure you are familiar with these at least to some degree, have suggested that curbing fast food promotion to children will have profound implications on their health. So we'll look at, over the next 20 minutes or so, a host of local policy options addressing fast food industry, demonstrate the importance of effective policy implementation, and then take a look at community strategies to advance some of these local policies. So it's actually a nice coming together of what we've seen so far, and then we'll have a chance to hear from Ken, who will really dig into what the policy piece is in Santa Clara. We could all learn a lot from that. So just a minute about Corporate Accountability International. We are a nonprofit membership organization. We're in official relations with three different UN agencies, including the World Health Organization. We've been around since 1977, and I would imagine that many of you in this room participated in our first campaign around infant formula marketing with the Nestle boycott. Who was a Nestle boycotter in the 70s and 80s? Okay, good. It means that you're at least old enough to have been around then and been active. So we, right now, our campaign areas focus on in three primary arenas. One, down here where the Think Outside the Bottle campaign and some of our international work on establishing and protecting the human right to water. We also continue our work on the Global Tobacco Treaty through the WHO. The U.S. has not yet ratified that treaty, no surprise, but has a huge opportunity to save millions and millions of lives. And then finally, our Value the Meal campaign, where we pursue taking on the corporate role in promoting junk food to establish good nutrition for all. So, the fast food industry, we've heard a little bit about it. I hope I'm not repeating too much this morning. But the industry has spent billions of dollars. We heard a minute ago that $2 billion, but we know as recently as 2009 it was upwards of $4 billion a year to help to market and promote fast food. That's creating a system where fast food is the cheapest, easiest, and most available choice for families. Today, more Americans eat more of their meals outside the home than ever. And we all know that these meals contain dangerous levels of sugar, fat, sodium, and calories, which are costing our economy right now about $150 billion a year on health-related costs. So it's a huge economic hit, which as public health advocates, we need to remember what the cost side of that equation is. Since 1980, obesity prevalence among children and adolescents in the U.S. has almost tripled. So we are facing a serious epidemic. If these trends continue, by the year 2030, one out of two adults will be obese. And since obesity is a leading cause of diabetes, researchers are estimating that if these recent increases in obesity and diabetes persist, our children and grandchildren, for the first time ever, will have shorter lifespans than the current generation. So we have an opportunity to have a serious, serious impact on saving lives if we act quickly. Increased consumption of fast foods is directly related to fast food marketing. I think we've seen a good case for that. The average child in the U.S. sees about 20,000 fast food commercials every year, and about 98% of those ads that are on television are for foods, again, high in fat, calories, sugar, and salt. Between 2003 and 2009, exposure to fast food TV commercials increased by 21% for younger children and by 39% for adolescents. So the case is very, very clear that studies that children who watch TV with commercials, which is what most of them watch in this country, have higher rates of obesity compared to the kids who watch TV without commercials. A child as young as 2 years old can begin developing brand preferences after seeing only one 30-second TV commercial. So imagine a two-year-old sees a 30-second ad, and there's brand loyalty that's starting to develop. It's not just television. Kids are exposed to fast food marketing everywhere, right? In and around schools, in hospitals, at libraries, sporting events, online when they're playing their harmless little games, and in and on movies and also at toy stores. In 2009, I said this earlier, but fast food corporations spent nearly $4.2 billion advertising their products, which has a big, big payoff because children aged, there was another study, I hope you don't all know this already, but a study of 3 to 5 year olds who were presented with two food options, the exact same food. One was packaged in McDonald's packaging and one wasn't. The kids chose the McDonald's packaged food above the other consistently. So there's no doubt about it that advertising influences children's food choices. We're faced with mixed messages everywhere we go. Childhood obesity, don't take it lightly. Right down the street, or sometimes in this case, right on the same billboard, there's also an ad for McDonald's. Let's talk about where Ronald is. Ray Kroc, McDonald's founder, said, back in the days when we first got a company airplane, we used to spot good locations for McDonald's stores by flying over a community and looking for schools. Now we use a helicopter and it's ideal. Imagine how excited he'd be with Google Apps and all those maps. It would be so much easier for Ray Kroc. And you can bet that McDonald's is using some of the very best strategies in choosing their locations. At Corporate Accountability International, we conducted a study in 2009 that found, actually we looked at in three cities, Chicago, San Francisco, and Boston. Chicago is the hometown area for McDonald's corporate headquarters. And in Chicago, more than 90% of that city's McDonald's were located within walking distance of a school. And this pattern of clustering was seen also in Boston and San Francisco. The National Bureau of Economic Research in that same year found that ninth graders whose schools were within a block of fast food outlets were more likely to be obese than students whose schools were further away. And for those same ninth graders, when the restaurant was within a tenth of a mile of a school, the risk of obesity for those kids is increased by a factor of 5. So placement is a burden on public health. There are right now more than 200,000 fast food restaurants in the United States. Nearly one in every three children eat fast food every day. Think about that. One in three eat fast food every day, at least once. That's a scary thought. We also know that from one study, another in Chicago, found that in a typical African-American neighborhood, the nearest grocery store is roughly twice as far as the nearest fast food restaurant. There are, in fact, in this country today, more fast food restaurants than public libraries or hospitals. And worse, some of you may have heard this last week on National Public Radio, there are 5 fast food restaurants for every supermarket in the U.S. So the work we have to do is big, big work. How much fast food outlets charge obviously has a big influence on who buys what. It is not an accident. Don Thompson, the chief financial officer of McDonald's, was recently quoted explaining that McDonald's doesn't base its prices on what the competition is charging. Instead, the corporation considers eating at home its competition and prices McDonald's food just below that cost. So they're not competing with Jack in the Box. They're not competing with Burger King. They're competing with what we cook at home. It's a brilliant, brilliant business strategy. Okay, let's talk about policy strategies. We are actually later this fall working with Dr. Nick Freudenberg at Hunter College, releasing a report, I think, that builds a lot on the piece that Christine has at the National Law Policy Center in Oakland. This report actually takes a comprehensive look at local policy options and then provides a toolkit for policymakers and health professionals to help advance these policies. And I'm today going to just do a quick overview of those, but you can get a copy of this report if you just hook up with us at the end, and I'll point out a couple of people to hand your business cards to if you'd like. But the 4 key areas are advancing school policies, Zoning and other built environmental strategies or built environment strategies that remove fast food outlets from parks, hospitals, government buildings, the areas around schools, and then other places that people gather in our communities. Reducing public subsidies for fast food corporations, and then, of course, limiting advertising and promotion. So, when we just take a look, we need to recognize that fast food products and marketing are absolutely common in our schools. About 20% of public schools in the United States sell branded fast food from chains such as McDonald's, Taco Bell, and Pizza Hut. The foods that are sold outside of the school meal program are known by the industry as competitive foods. And until recently, those competitive foods were subject only to minimal federal regulation. These are, of course, the foods that are high in fat, sugar, and calories. While most of these foods are found in high schools, almost a third of U.S. elementary schools also allow them in. In 2005, so it's a little dated, nonetheless very important, the GAO found that school food policies that decrease access to unhealthy competitive foods do, in fact, contribute to a decline in consumption of competitive food consumption during the school day. There are often problems with school administrators who look at competitive foods as a source of revenue, but new studies that are coming out illustrate to the school administrators that little or no money is earned by those school districts from competitive foods, and that offering healthy foods instead of the competitive food or the junk food often can generate as much or even more revenue for those districts. So it's the economic argument that we hear from school districts, it's not legit. Thank you. 5 minutes. Okay. There are more examples around where school policies have had a major impact in Connecticut, in the Los Angeles Unified School District, and then at UC Berkeley. So different actions based on your constituency. There's always something for people to do. If we then move to the second area where limiting where fast food chains operate, communities use zoning often to set rules. Well, zoning is used to set rules to protect the health and safety of residents. In states across the country, from California to Maine, Texas to Wisconsin, there are successful examples of using zoning and other legal approaches to control where and how fast food outlets can operate. This will be more profiled in the report coming out later this fall, and you can get a picture of that. But there are many models of zoning policies that we can move forward in our communities. Ending subsidies. There is much to be done here. We can very much level the playing field by ending subsidies for fast food companies. There are some state and local governments that provide economic development subsidies for fast food companies. Some states actually allow fast food restaurants to accept food stamps. In some ways, it makes sense, right? The nearest grocery store isn't very close, so where are you going to get your food? In the fast food chain. But it's up to the legislators and up to us to move our legislators to make those changes possible. It's also, in some states, the industry's been able to keep labor costs low and prices low based on the minimum wage being so low. So if we affect that policy as well, we can see some important changes. U.S. tax code, I hope you all know, with all the Occupy Wall Street coverage that's out there, a lot of these advertising expenses are tax deductible. We can change the tax code as well. There are many ways to also limit advertising and promotion that targets children. Corporations, use toys and other incentives to entice children to eat fast food. There's no doubt about it that the toys draw the kids to the food or to the meal. Oftentimes, all the kid will do is take a bite or two out of the burger, but really what they want is the latest toy. I was walking by a McDonald's earlier this week and noticed the new cats that are there for the, what's the movie, that's out? Puss in Boots. Thank you. You must have a kid. Anyway, they're very appealing. Even I thought, ah. So when we know, we still have to fight it off. All right, I want to take a look at San Francisco for a minute, which passed last fall the Healthy Meals Incentive Ordinance. How many people know about this? It was a groundbreaking piece of legislation. It was one brave member of the Board of Supervisors who stepped forward McDonald's reacted very, very aggressively, and it took really effective organizing from the public health community, from all the foodies across the city, and from just folks invested in healthy communities coming together, working with some national organizations that helped to draw attention to the issue. McDonald's tried everything, rewriting the policy. They used scare tactics and threats, including legal threats. They actually asked for an exemption, saying that they were working with the White House on policy. When the Board of Supervisors contacted the White House said, no, we support this ordinance. We do not know what McDonald's is talking about. So McDonald's and the fast food industry will react aggressively, so we need to be prepared for that. These local policies are very important. We'll hear more about this from Santa Clara, but I do really want to encourage you to get a copy of the toolkit. Juliana and Sri Ram, if you want to hand them your business card, we'll be happy to get you a copy of the toolkit when it's available later this fall. And if you want to reach Dr. Nick Freudenberg, who's working on the report, here's his contact information. You can get it from me afterward. And then you can also work with us on our letter to McDonald's or our open letter to McDonald's from public health officials. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.